Hello, I'm Martin Kelly, senior editor of Friends Journal, and the current month's issue, the June-July issue, is called Almost Quaker. And with me today is Andrew Glazer, who has an article on this very topic, and it's somewhere here, that's about Quaker billboards. And Andrew is from Visalia, California meeting, and he is not an Almost Quaker. He did join. And that's what we're going to be talking about. So thank you, Andrew, for Skyping across country with me here. I'm in New Jersey. You're in California.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about the billboard. I mean, this is a fun billboard, and people will be able to look online to see it, but very sort of homemade billboards along the side of the roads.
It is. You know, it was there years ago before there were any laws governing it. And it's been sort of grandfathered in.
Okay.
And because it's there, the Quakers have taken advantage of the fact that, well, let's put something else up there. It's not just a Christmas tree farm anymore. Historically, the property had been a Christmas tree farm. And Bill and Beth Lovett ran the farm. And then over time, the Quaker slogans and ideas started popping up. No war, peace is the way. What part of thou shalt not kill do you not understand?
A little bit of it, yeah.
You shall not oppress the sojourners in your land.
Right.
That was the one that I saw, and I was driving by, and you have to understand how incredibly conservative Tulare County is. And I think the Grapes of Wrath is a good place to start to understand the sort of have and have nots that live here. Probably a book like The King of California is another. There's not a huge middle class here. You are either an owner of a large farm or you work on the farm. And then there's a few people in the middle. But it's very cut and dry here. So to put up a sign like that here was very brave. And the first thing I said, these people are crazy. I got to see what they're doing. And I say that lovingly.
Right.
They were so brave to put that up. And the next Sunday I went to the meeting. And I have never looked back. My daughter has grown up in this meeting. They've helped raise her. They are family to me, to be clear. And they're wonderful, wonderful people. And I thought, you know, if they hadn't put that billboard up, I never would have stopped. I never would have renounced my religion and become a Quaker. And it was a brave thing. And so I feel grateful that they did that because it's made my life better.
Sure. Well, it's amazing that just sort of a simple project. So how often, the sign continues, how often is it updated?
Oh, about every 6 months or so. We have one up now which says, when the love of power is overcome by the, let's see, when the love of money is overcome, oh goodness, I'm blanking out. I don't have a picture in front of me. It's a quote about, when the power of love exceeds the love of power, then the world shall know peace.
There it is. Yeah.
And that's the simple version. And they credit Jimi Hendrix with it, but it's a much older English phrase. And so we have to make it very quick. People have about 2 seconds to read it. So the next one will be announcing the Harvest Festival. And after that, we'll have yet another one. And we'll come up with something. We always do. Graciela Martinez and her daughter, who is a wonderful painter, have done a lot of the artwork. A lot of people volunteer to jump in. I was an art major, and I like a quick read, something that is very graphic and is going to fly. And so I use a projector shamelessly, and I get all the artwork done on a computer first, and then I just project it so it's crisp and clean and can be read quickly. And I have a lot of fun doing it. It's a lot of work, but we do it on 4 plywood panels, and up it goes. And so, and I have to say, I've had many people call up and say, you know, my husband doesn't like it, but I love it every time you put another one up there. A lot of people from other, religious backgrounds will say, I love that stuff so much. Don't stop doing it. And we have some people that are very upset about it, and they're mad about it, and that's fine. It is to provoke in a good way, to stimulate people to talk about stuff, and to make them think about the price of war. To say, you know, thou shalt not kill, that is something that a lot of people will say, but they don't really mean. And I remember being very close to signing up to going in the Navy and going to art school instead, and I'm so glad I did, because one of the things that kept me from being a Navy pilot was the thought that I would have to kill somebody someday, and I said, I cannot do that. So I went to art school, and I'm thrilled and glad I did. I will say, I have a lot of respect for soldiers. I always am very welcoming, and I'm thankful that they stood up for what they believed in, even if I disagree with that, which they did. And, you know, of course, a lot of people who are in combat will tell you there is nothing glorious about this. They make some of the best peace activists. In fact, we have a few former Marines who feel the very same way who are in our meetings. So I, it's a powerful thing that we do. I think it's important that it carry an important message. And so when I'm out there painting it at 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, it kind of buoys me along. It makes me kind of want to do a good job on this. So it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Great. It's a great project and good way of just really being visible out there in the community. So I'm glad you got that grandfathered in, that you were able to do that.
Yeah. Also, it's analog. It's wooden paint.
Yeah.
In a digital world, here we are, you know, Skyping. Mm-hmm. It sits there at night alone with the dew on it, and then people will drive by and see it. I mean, there's something beautiful about it, and I'm old enough to remember before there were computers. So I still like this sort of stuff, the hand-done, rough-hewn look of things. And even the kids like it. We get a lot of comments from a lot of different people. So I know it's doing its job.
Well, and let's segue a little bit here. One of the things you said in the article that makes it sort of fit into the Almost Quaker was your story of when you did come to visit the meeting and started to get involved, that no one pressured you to do anything. No one bothered you. No one told you that you should maybe become a member, that there was a very laid-back, laissez-faire kind of attitude. And one of the things I found interesting is that one of the other articles in the issue is by someone who went to a meeting for the first time and pretty much it sounds like experienced a similar attitude, but then left because they wanted more. But you stayed and grew into it because of that laissez-faire. So tell us a little bit about how that helped you, that process.
I think, you know, you can attribute to the power of suggestion, but nothing was even suggested. I was just welcomed, and that was it. And it was, there was no sales pitch.
Yeah.
There was nothing like that. And I thought, you know, these people are just so wonderful. And there was something enigmatic about the fact that Beth Lovett would do these amazing flower arrangements, or Graciela Martinez would bring these huge banquets of what she calls Mexican spaghetti, which is the most amazing meal. And if you ever come here, I will insist that she cooks them for you because it's breathtaking. And Bob and Joy Marshall, who would talk about their experiences. Bob was he, instead of going to World War II, was a smoke jumper. And so he is very proud of serving his country peacefully in a creative way. Bill Lovett actually refused to be a smoke jumper and went to federal prison because of his beliefs and ended up integrating the lunchroom. And he was so effective at that that he was thrown out of prison. And this is the 1940s. So they would tell me these stories, and they wouldn't say, come be a Quaker. They would say, this is what I did with my life. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it just left this ringing in my ears that said, what am I going to do with my life? Am I going to just punch a time clock? Or will I do something to make the world a better place? And I was never asked to do so. And there's something very soft and welcoming about that, which I fell in love with, and I could not leave. I would miss a Sunday and feel terrible. The meditation has helped me greatly. So I don't know what it is, but it was powerful. If they had tried to get me to come, I probably wouldn't because I don't like being sold to. I don't like spam. I don't like people calling me to get me to do something or to vote one way. I naturally resist that. They didn't, and here I am, and I'm glad they did.
And how is it now on the other side? You talked about people who come visit the meeting who are almost Quakers, and you try to welcome them in that same way. So what are some kind of findings you have, tips about how to be really focused on a person enough that they know that they are welcome in this community without being the sales pitch?
Humor is often a good intro, because the first thing most people who don't know anything about the Quakers is they ask a serial question. You know, and I will usually use that to talk about the Black Hat and the fact that at one time 2/3 of English men were in prison because they would not tip their hat to the lords when seeing them on the street. And that's something that made them, you know, they didn't know that. They didn't learn that in school. But that's a powerful message. And so, you know, if they have sort of a rebellious streak, I talk about the fact that the Quakers are, you know, peaceful citizens, but they will politely refuse to do something that the government ask them to do, whether it's to go to war or pay taxes during a war or whatever. And you will see some libertarian type people who feel drawn to that. There's a lot of politically different people here in the Valley, and a lot of different ethnic groups too. And the fact that we have many Latinos that are fluent and bilingual, we have a lot of people who are of Oaxacan. They're from Oaxaca, Mexico, and they were driven out by a lot of the violence. We give them places on the farm to grow their vegetables, and they grow, you know, beautiful vegetables. We have a lot of friends who are Wachumni, which is a local Native American group. And while they probably wouldn't become Quakers, they spend a lot of time at the meeting house with us. In fact, we've given them space in the property to do their cultural celebrations. And so we get in farmers who want to help with some of the different farming aspects that we're doing. We have people with horses that want to use the property for grazing. Myself and my friends are biologists, so we bring in, you know, information to help during the drought with replanting trees. We're getting all sorts of different people in here now because of our increased visibility.
Well, that's great. And some of them are sticking and joining, or maybe that's not even the question.
I would say that it's sort of like an onion. You get the core people, mm-hmm. then you get the people that come waiting once a month or every other month. But the thing is, what we're doing is creating a network, and if they don't become a Quaker and show up every Sunday, but they still show up at political rallies, or they're conscious of other pending litigate, you know, political things, something like that, we keep them in a loop. And the real telling story is the Easter morning breakfast, when there's probably 250 people that show up that we don't see, but maybe that one time, but they're always, you know, keeping in touch. We see each other on Facebook. So we have varying degrees of influence in the community, mm-hmm. but clearly a lot, and quite frankly, a lot with the Unitarians, who are just wonderful folks that we do a lot with. So we share sort of a network of political action, consciousness, and awareness here in the Valley. They might come, they might not, but they know who we are, and we're a tight group out here also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in some ways, maybe it doesn't matter exactly the, you know, membership status of people. One of the reasons we wanted to do this issue is I'm sort of wondering if Friends need to sort of think about different ways of, you know, that these networks, we have these networks and people who are connected in some way and they're not members, and many of them probably won't become members, but is that really what's important?
You know, I think so. We actually discussed in our meeting to stop using the term born Quaker. I can't remember the exact term, but because it's denoted somewhat of a hierarchy as opposed to someone who chose to become a Quaker. And I remember with, you know, some of the different religious groups on the East Coast, they would wait until they were 16 or 17 to decide whether or not they wanted to join the religion or not. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said about that. My daughter definitely identifies as a Quaker. Her grandmother will take her to the some of the different churches in town and reads the Bible and gives her a little, you know, Noah's Ark coloring books, which I'm totally okay with. Mm-hmm. I don't want to close doors and try to tell her what to think. And so I want her to learn as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But she definitely identifies as a Quaker.
Yeah. Great. Well, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to give you a one more chance to tell us about the next billboard. You mentioned a little bit about it, but what's coming up next there with the Vasilia Friends?
Well, you know, that's really up to the meeting. I would love to be able to tell you, here's what it is. You know, what I would say is when I went to England and I met the people at the Yeeland meeting, it was so lovely how there was all these elderly folks, and there was this one young gal, and they just focused all their attention on her. And after she went out and left, and we broke meeting, they said, you know, are you running out of children too? Are you having this problem? And I said, oh no, we have herds of children. You know, we have lots of kids. And I told them about the farm and how it had helped our meeting get more young people in. And I cannot wait to go back to England and go to some of these other old meeting houses and talk to them, because I think some of them back there were sort of nervous that the Quakers were sort of disappearing, and I see a lot of growth where we're at. I think where the Quakers are needed, they're definitely going to grow. I know the Mill Valley, California meeting recently laid down, and everybody was shocked because Mill Valley was the home of, you know, a lot of the counterculture 60s types, the Grateful Dead. A lot of hippies went up there, but property values are now through the roof, and most of the people living there could not afford to live there if they had to start from scratch. So where we are is where Quakers are needed, where there's a lot of economic disparity, where a lot of the Latino farm workers are treated horribly. And the reason I brought up that sort of the history of what's happened here with Sonora Bab and with Steinbeck is because Steinbeck took much of Sonora Bab's, you know, inspiration. She was a nurse and was horrified at all of the poverty, and he took that and turned it into a novel. She never really got credit. And in the Ken Burns film, The West, he talked about that. There was a Dust Bowl, excuse me. And there's just a little bit, but it's well worth seeing the Dust Bowl, because I had to shut it off after a while because he talked about how many children died. And, you know, we had a young woman who was pregnant out here, and she dropped dead in a field, and her body temperature was about 109 degrees. It was unthinkably high. And she was pregnant, you know, picking grapes. And this is where our food comes from, and this is where the Quakers are needed. And so we definitely have a mission out here. And maybe in a place where it's affluent and everything's taken care of, the Quakers aren't as, you know, influential. Clearly, we have things to do out here. And so when I get that next billboard up, I'll send you a picture. And and thank you, because I think more than anything, I'm glad to put Visalia on the map. I'll tell people where they're from. They know San Francisco. They know L.A. And there's so much more of California that is not on the coast that people will never see. Mm-hmm. So if you come to Visalia, people say we have the most beautiful meeting house in the state, if I can brag. And so we have a lot of few jokes here. It's quite attractive and lovely, and you're always welcome.
Okay, great. Well, we'll definitely, when we get that picture, we'll put it up on our Facebook.
Thank you so much.
The latest picture. So thank you for joining us. And again, Andrew's article here, it's called The Billboard, and it's laid out even as a billboard. And it's in the June-July issue of Friends Journal, Almost Quaker. It's available even if you're not a subscriber. But if you are a subscriber, even better, and you get even more articles. So thank you, Andrew, for writing it and for being here with us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.